Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 29th of July, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Katie Chapman and Junie Hayes about the upcoming workshops on preventing suicide. Also profile Tony Tang, one of tonight's performers of the Arts Council Concerts in the Park series. And we'll have more bear stories. That's Writer's Almanac, music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, low temperatures around 49 degrees with light winds. Cloudy skies predicted for Saturday with a chance of rain and high temperatures 56 to 65 degrees and light winds. Forecast for the next few days looks like there is a chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Empowering Native youth to be future leaders was a goal of the 2011 National Intertribal Youth Summit. Native youth 13 and older from tribes across the country interacted with federal officials and their peers. Evan Eustace from Zuni Pueblo in New Mexico talked about suicide. He says he wanted to get the message across that there's hope and help out there.
Life on the reservation is hard. We face a lot of poverty, a lot of substance abuse, a lot of drugs and alcoholism. Especially, we actually have two bars located near the Pueblo, so it's really hard dealing with alcoholism, and it's really out of control. And suicide is a big issue too. We've had a huge amount of suicides in just a short amount of time, actually about 13 suicides, and that's just unacceptable to me.
The 17-year-old says it's important to have representatives of the same age talk to each other because they can relate. That's something chaperone Tiffany Smalley agrees with. She brought three girls ages 12, 15, and 18 to the conference from the Aquinnah Wampanoag tribe in Massachusetts. Smalley hopes they take home a sense of empowerment because they're dealing with many of the same issues being discussed, like substance use and economic stability.
I think they're all at different stages in their developing leadership responsibilities and developing leadership skills, and I really hope that they all see that they can and will play some part in tribal affairs in the future, and in how they can play some part in how making our tribal community better.
More than 150 youth took part in this week's summit held in Santa Fe, New Mexico, by the U.S. Justice Department. More than 50 federally funded projects on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior are underway to clean up pollution and return the Great Lakes to their natural state. Mike Simonson looks at one effort that tests mercury levels in fish.
15-7 female, 12-7.
Last April, tribal members of Lake Superior Ojibwa followed an ancient custom by spearing fish on the turtle flambeau flowage. Some of these fish ended up in a laboratory in Superior to be tested for mercury levels. Most of the fish are from inland lakes in northern Wisconsin, but a handful of lakes are also tested from Michigan's Upper Peninsula and northern Minnesota. A three-year, $458,000 grant from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to GLIFWIC, the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission in Odena, makes this testing possible. Mick Isham of the Lakota Ray Band of Ojibwe is the chairman of the GLIFWIC board. He says they've been testing fish for mercury for the past quarter century.
I mean, what good is it eating a fish if you're going to be poisoned by it?
High levels of mercury can damage the human nervous system, especially among newborns and children. Isham says tribal people have a bigger stake in knowing how much mercury is in the lakes they fish. Fishing isn't sport for them. It's for sustenance and their cultural life.
I mean, we eat them at every feast, at every funeral, at every ceremony, and then just within the family home.
Isham has been spearing fish since tribes exercised their treaty rights more than 25 years ago. He says without the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, efforts to restore native plants, wild rice, as well as fish in their region would be dramatically cut back. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson on the Bad River Reservation.
On this day in 2010, President Obama signed the Tribal Law and Order Act into law to address crime in Indian Country. Both federal and tribal officials acknowledge there are still many challenges and work to be done in Indian Country. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with additional funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are Katie Chapman from NAMI and Ginny Hayes from Bartlett Regional Hospital. She's also a therapist here to talk about some upcoming workshops in understanding suicide building intervention skills. Thank you for coming down the station, everybody.
You're welcome.
So first of all, Katie, if you could give us an overview of NAMI for briefly.
Sure. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and NAMI developed here in Juneau in the 90s. And we're all about support, advocacy, and education for mental illness.
And Ginny, how is Bartlett Regional Hospital involved?
Oh, well, Bartlett has a mental health inpatient unit, and it is for crisis management, and we deal with people that are suicidal. And so part of my involvement with the Juneau Suicide Prevention Task Force has been as a member of the Bartlett employed people.
What's the scope of the suicide problem here in Juneau?
Well, I just happen to have a few statistics here for you. And this is coming from the Juneau Suicide Prevention Task Force. By the way, there is a wonderful website that you can access on the computer that is JunoSuicidePrevention.org, and it has many resources, lists of therapists and psychiatrists, just all kinds of resources for people to access. So, and I'm reading to you from some paperwork that was part of our task force, and it talks about the statistics of Alaska Native males age 15 to 24 have the highest suicide rates in the country compared to any other subpopulation. Also, there's been an 18% increase in suicide rates across the country of youths 10 to 19. From the fall of 2006 to March of 2008, 8 young adults committed suicide in Juneau, 4 during the 2007 and 8 school year. So statistically, that's considered very, very high.
What about Native Americans? What about Native Americans?
That was the initial 15. It's very high. Alaska Native and Native Americans.
For Alaska Native males age 15 through 24, they had the highest rate
in the country.
Pretty astonishing figure. What are some of the resources besides the website that are available here in Juneau? What are some of the resources that the website points out?
Well, lots, including how to access emergency services if you're concerned about somebody, what to do, signs and symptoms of suicidality, things to watch for, ways to talk to somebody about being suicidal.
Mm-hmm. Workshop is called Understanding Suicide Building Intervention Skills. It meets on the first Tuesday of every month from 5:15 until 7 at the United Way Conference Room. Can you tell me first where the United Way Conference Room is?
You know that odd-shaped little building that's at the bottom of Hospital Drive, across from where Valley Medical used to be and now the Juneau Bone and Joint. It's right on the creek. And the conference room is upstairs. We do ask that people that are coming to that Tuesday, first Tuesday of every month presentation, they actually contact NAMI to pre-register so we know how many people to plan for. And NAMI's number is?
NAMI's number is 463-4251. And you can also register online at interventionjunonami@gmail.org, or you could just send me an email at junonami at Gmail.
What kind of things will be going on at the workshop on Tuesday?
On Tuesday, it's the Dr. Bauer film will be shown. Do you want to talk more about that, Jenny?
Sure. We had a visit by Dr. Bob Bauer, who came through on a cruise ship. He had been up here working with Catholic Community Services on a consultation basis. And then he called the folks over there and said, hey, I'm coming up through Juneau on a cruise ship, and I would love to kind of give to the community of Juneau my expertise. And so they said, yes, of course, and free of charge. And so So he did a two-hour presentation that was quite well attended, and it was videotaped by you guys at K2 or whoever was doing it mm-hmm. at the time. And then the first hour of it is about how to talk to somebody about whether they're suicidal, what means they might have access to, and those kinds of things. And so we basically facilitate showing that first hour. And it's kind of considered to be kind of like the old CPR was for heart attacks. You know, 35 years ago, not everybody and their brother knew CPR, and so people died more of heart attacks. And so we're thinking, now if people aren't afraid to ask somebody if they're suicidal, you know, people have the misconception that if you use the S word, then it'll somehow influence them to be more suicidal, but that is not the case. So, but for a lot of people, it's very hard to ask that question.
Hard to talk about and just get comfortable saying those words.
Correct.
Asking somebody. So there's some role-playing that takes place.
Right.
What are some of the signs and symptoms of someone thinking about committing suicide?
Oh, depression's the big one. Hopelessness, helplessness, desperation, starting to give things away, start making statements like, what's the point? Life's not worth living, isolating. Gosh, I didn't bring the whole list with me, but.
They're available on the website, don't
they? Yes, they are. Thank you.
Tell me more about the task force here in Juneau.
It was first, it kind of came together under a special three-year grant that Dr. Brendan Kiernan put together to address the issues in the high schools, in the school system, teaching kids to not keep secrets. And so it's a nationally known teaching tool as well as screening tool for kids at risk. But they actually used the tool with all freshmen, I believe it was. And just for your information, in 2007, the number of students that were self-reporting emotional distress and suicidal thoughts was pretty amazing. Like at JDHS, 25% quote felt so sad and hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks or more in a row that they stopped doing some of the usual activities. So that's 25%. That's a lot. So anyway, the task force grew out of the SOS program in the schools, and it's grassroots. It's across agencies, private people.
There was a lot of people involved.
A
lot of organizations, yeah.
What kind of people should be going to this first workshop and maybe subsequent workshops on Tuesdays?
Everybody. Parents, neighbors,
mm-hmm.
youth,
yep.
teachers.
It's meant to be kind of like CPR goes to babysitters, mm-hmm. goes to this, anybody. Everybody is very, very welcome. I've been talking with clergy members that want us to come to their churches to give the presentation. So we pretty much just facilitate Dr. Bauer's presentation, and it's excellent.
And then the following Tuesdays, it meets once a month on the first Tuesday of every month?
Every month until nobody's interested, mm-hmm. and then we'll probably still keep trying.
Right. Before we go away here, Katie, do you want to talk about the family-to-family workshops?
Sure. One of NAMI's signature programs is a 12-week self-help course. It's titled Family to Family, and it's going to start October 3rd and run actually only about 11 weeks until December 12th, and it's going to be held at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center Monday nights from 5 to 7:30. So that's family to family, free, and it's for family members who are caretakers of somebody with a mental illness. So it's support, and there's also a lot of education about mental illness and how to cope, and that's it.
And people should call to NAMI to register?
Yes, call 463-4251 or email me at namijuno@gmail.com.
All right, my guests have been Katie Chapman and Junie Hayes talking about the Building Intervention and Skills Understanding Suicide workshop. It's going on the first Tuesday of every month. This next Tuesday is going to be at the United Way Conference Room. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just one last thing, and that is that this is not to train anybody to be a mental health clinician. This is really for any lay population who just wants to have some extra skills to deal with this issue.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
The Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 29th of July, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist Booth Tarkington, born Indianapolis, 1869, wrote about the Midwest and its people. He was one of the most popular novelists of the early 20th century, famous for his novel The Magnificent Ambersons and also Alice Adams. Booth Tarkington, who said, "There are two things that will be believed of any man whatsoever, and one of them is that he has taken to drink." It was on this day, 1890, Vincent van Gogh died, having shot himself in the chest in a wheat field 2 days before. He made it home to his own bed. When he was found, he said, "I shot myself. I only hope I haven't botched it." His brother Theo was sent for. He rushed from Paris to the bedside. Van Gogh's friend Emile Bernard wrote about the funeral. "The sun was terribly hot outside. We climbed the hill outside Auvers, talking about him, about the daring impulse he had given to art, of the great projects he was always thinking about, and about the good he had done to all of us. We reached the cemetery, a small new cemetery strewn with new tombstones. It's on a little hill above the fields that were ripe for harvest, under the wide blue sky that he would still have loved. Then he was lowered into the grave. Anyone would have started crying at that moment. The day was too much made for him, for one not to imagine that he was still alive and enjoying it." Experts have argued over the cause of Van Gogh's mental illness. They've named schizophrenia, bipolar, epilepsy, paint poisoning, syphilis, whatever it was probably made worse by insomnia, overwork, malnutrition, and alcohol. It's the birthday of the poet Stanley Kunitz, 1905, Worcester, Massachusetts, published his first book of poetry in 1930, an amazing, productive writer who in 1971 made a shift in his work from a formal style to one that was looser and written in everyday language. He said, "As an old poet, I look for spareness and rigor and a world of compassion." And it was on this day, 1907, Sir Robert Baden-Powell set up the first scout camp in England and launched the Scouting Movement. He'd been training soldiers in the Boer War in South Africa, and he was dismayed to learn how few soldiers knew basic first aid and survival skills. At the scout camp, he taught the boys tracking, orienteering, and outdoor cooking without utensils. Here's a poem for today by Charles W. Pratt, Prayer for the Small Engine Repairman. Our Sundays are given voice by the small engine repairman, whose fingers, stubby and black, know our mowers and tractors, chainsaws, rototillers, each plug, gasket, and valve, and all the vital fluids. Thanks to him, our lawns are even, our gardens vibrant, our maples pruned for swings, the underbrush whacked away. What's broke can always be fixed if I can find the parts, he says, as he loosens a nut, exposes the carburetor, tinkers and tunes, until, to the slightest pull on the cord, the engine at once concurs. Let him come into our homes. Let him discipline our children, console and counsel our mates, adjust the gap of our passions, the mix of our humors, lay hands on the small engine of our days. Prayer for the Small Engine Repairman by Charles W. Pratt, from his collection The Box Marked Some Are Missing, New and Selected Poems, published by Hobblebush Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tabloid newspaper carried the story, stated simply that a small-town emergency squad had been summoned to a house where smoke was pouring from an upstairs window. The crew broke in and found a man in a smoldering bed. After the man was rescued and the mattress doused, the obvious question was asked. How did this happen? He said, I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know, it was on fire when I lay down on it. The story stuck like a bird in my mental sights, and reminded me of a phrase copied into my journal from the dedication of some book. Kidrides, mutato nomine, data fabula narrator. Latin, in the writings of Horace, translated. Why do you laugh? Change the name and the story is told of you. Why do you laugh? Change the name and the story is told of you. He said, I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. A lot of us could settle for that on our tombstone. A life story in a sense. Out of the frying pan and into the hot water, I was looking for trouble and got into it as soon as I found it. The devil made me do it the first time. And after that, I did it on my own. The point this drew the less intense level, I poured a conversation with a colleague who was complaining that he had the same damn thing in his lunch sack, day after day after day. So who makes your lunch? I asked. I do, says he. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. one more thing about the man in the burning bed in the story. As with most of what we see other people do, we don't know why they do it either. Why did he lay down in the burning bed? Was he drunk? Ill? Suicidal? Blind? Cold? Or did he just have a weird sense of humor? Or what? I don't know. Hard to tell without a lot more information. Oh, sure, we go ahead and judge anyhow. But maybe if judgment were suspended just a little bit more often, we would like us more. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know. It was on fire when I lay down on it. I don't know.
And it's Tony Tang's from one of his first releases here in the capital city. The work of Robert, based on the text of Robert Fulgham. Tony's in the studio with us tonight, and he's also going to be appearing at the Concerts in the Park tonight, along with Becky Bear, Bobby Mitchell, and the Hula Dancers, and Tony Tang's and friends are going to be performing. Tony's in the studio. Tony, thank you for coming down the station today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's always a pleasure.
1991.
That's when that one was written, in the summer of 91 up in Haines, and in the first incarnation of the Chocolate Blanket Company.
You grew up in Haines.
I grew up in Haines. I was born here in Juneau, and I like to tell people, because I was born in the old St. Anne's Hospital, I live four blocks away from there now, that I haven't made it very far in my life. So.
But you've released a couple of CDs, and you're working on a third one.
Yeah, we'd like to get the third one done. What you played was off of our first recording, of which there's only about 30 copies in existence, maybe 20 even, back when CDs were pretty expensive to make. We had some demos made, and a few people supported the recording and burning of those. And no, that was nice. I learned about melodies and putting things to music. That was based on the writings of Robert Fulgham's first two books. His first one was All I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. This was the title piece from the second one, which started the whole gambit we got into, and that was called It Was on Fire When I Lay Down on It.
Where did the group name Fulgham's Preserves come from?
Well, we would, after I created that song, which was so fun and people seemed to like it, my lieutenant chocolatier, his name was Mark Hochhauser, used to go by Moot back then, but he was into writing songs, and that was my first thing I'd ever done. We decided we would go after 9 more songs and have 10 total and sort of do an album of his writings put to music. I mean, he was hot. He was such a, I mean, Robert Fulgham's books were selling like hotcakes, and we thought we'd somehow get rich by putting them to music. So we went after it, and when we'd get together, it was a play on his name, Fulgham. Robert Fulgham would say we'd have a full jam session, and the jam led to the preserves, you see. That's how that started.
What was it like growing up in Haines?
It was great. It was really great when I was a kid. I mean, there was no TV, and it seemed like the town would turn out more for events, like Halloween and this and that and the other thing, and it was just more one giant family. And there are a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life. And Haines then had the only road out of Southeast, so we had everybody flowing through, heading north. So we had a constant flow of people from every state and many countries coming right through town.
And your parents had a unique night spot and morning spot, too.
And morning spot, yeah, the Bamboo Room and Pioneer Bar. And it still is unique.
I see you walking around every now and then with your mom. That's kind of a nice sight. Your mom, Helen, is still around. What kind of values do you think they instilled in you when you were growing up?
Well, those good, solid, Lutheran, honest values that I were never really acknowledged. They're just kind of decent. I've learned more about those values in many ways just listening to Garrison Keillor, who was on in the interim just before I came on here. Mom gave me music. I just honor her with that, bringing music to my life and supporting that. And my father, too, liked music. He sang. He, not very often, but he had a deep voice. He would sing Old Man River, you know, that song. And my father's love of words I've inherited. I wish I had what he did. I mean, he could do the New York crossword puzzle in pen every day. But I still love words.
You come out with a variety of unique products. What was the first product? Was it Love Gaskets?
Yeah, that's another love of words made into a product trademark. I've done a number of trademarks, and that one is one of my greatest hits that never went very far. I did get marketed to a condom company in California called Mirror Labs, and they test marketed, but we had such a tough time with designing the package to work with that name that, you know, coming out of the shoot with something like that, you have to hit it. You have to hit it right. You don't want to be winking at people and kind of making them think that it's a joke or something. We wanted to keep playful but not wink at the audience with your package.
Mm-hmm. You also had a T-shirt, which is also a backgammon board.
Yeah, that's one of the early, that came before Love Gasket, that was called Body Boards. And we had them in REI, we had them in Eastern Mountain Sports. That was during my Seattle years. I spent the 80s in Seattle. And I switched from leather pieces to a leather gasket material, which would print better. And that's where the term gasket came into my mind, which evolved into the Love Gasket project.
Another one of your products is the Chilcat chocolate blanket. I made a big chocolate bar.
Yeah, that comes from my love of the Northwest Coast art. And growing up in Tlingit country, I'm really feel lucky to have been close to that, and my love of that whole culture is very deep. And when we made that, I was commissioned, and it's a very beautiful piece, actually. It was designed by an artist, and he, it's non-clan specific, but it's a very beautiful tribute, and a number of the weavers loved that piece too. So that got me, that was the precursor to, which I'm sure will come up, the Chilcat cone.
Want to describe what a Chilcat cone is for people who don't know what it is?
Chilcat cone is a sugar cone baked in a waffle. It's a waffle cone for ice cream that has a form line Northwest Coast design baked into it. And that, too, was commissioned to be non-clan specific, and it's using the form line principles. It's got a nice smile, and it represents a bird, but it's a very beautiful piece of edible confection.
Now, you're not a guy to do half things halfway. It seems like you work for years and years just on the design and then on the actual producing the cone itself.
That has been difficult. I mean, I've gone through many generations of my cone bakers. I've been lucky to have John Ingalls as part of my pit crew, you know, in the racetrack to build these things, and he's been a big help. A lot of help from a lot of people along the way, various engineers here and there, and I've learned a lot. And then each year my cone bakers get better, and I learn a little bit more about how to do this stuff.
Where can people get your Chilcat cone now?
Well, I want to thank Mary Giuliani for helping bring it back after we lost our space. But we are in the second year now in the new location down in Merchants Wharf on the Waterside, right next to the hairdresser. It's right where I think it was Tradewinds used to be. And so we have the cones. She has some chocolates and truffles. And we also have the new Jill Cat Cones gift box down there, which people are finding out is a great thing to take from Juno.
Concurrently with all these inventions and products you've been putting out, you've also put out a second CD by the Preserves. You want to explain the how the Preserves got together?
Well, after Amut and I wrote those songs, like we talked about, we needed to record them, and that's pretty much when I had the pleasure and honor of meeting Albert McDonald. He was starting his studio then, and a number of people helped out. Robert Cohen was principal in helping us out back then, too, both on keyboards and guitar. And Juno really ponies up and helps out in amazing ways. There's so many, Andy Ferguson, I mean, there's so many wonderful musicians. Ross Brown, who later came onto the second album, was one of the people that Juno's amazing for offering up amazing people.
You're familiar with that on the Alaska Folk Festival stage as well, with your assortment of seemed like thousands of people on the stage at one time.
Yeah, I rival Colette Costa at times. I don't think I've beaten her yet. Maybe I've matched her in terms of personnel. She probably beats me all the time, but I've had as many as 12 on stage.
What's your songwriting process?
My process is I collect little ideas on napkins oftentimes. When I work, I bartend on the ferries, and I might just hear some phrase or think of something, and oftentimes the rhythm of the phrase will inspire a melody. That's something I understood or felt, and then I heard a jazz musician talk about the rhythm pulling melodies. And so I understood that process. So the rhythm of the language will pull my melodies oftentimes. So I'll write this phrase down, and I regard it to be a portal into a song, and then I'll never be able to deal with it at the moment, but I set it aside, and I have a weird kind of notation to kind of indicate what that rhythm was that I was hearing when I heard that phrase, and then I'll revisit, and I'll sometimes... For the writing of Preserve set, it's generally three songs, and would try to do a real disarming one first. And getting the right nutty thing is oftentimes hard for me, and that's when I go to my friend Wayne Ward, who is very nutty, and he helps me with some nutty ideas.
Tony Tangs and friends could be performing tonight at the Concert in the Park series following Becky Barron, Bobby Mitchell, and also the Hula Dancers. What can we expect to see tonight?
We're doing close to the same set that we did 2 weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago at Savico Park. Back then we had George Wallace with us, and that was an honor. He was back in town for 2 weeks, and we got to take advantage of him. He helped record the second album. And so that was great. It was George and I. And I'm working. See, once again, Juno provides the best... I've been working with this last set and this set, Shania Moore, who graduated from Juno Douglas High School this last spring. And she is awesome. She is a very awesome singer, helping me out on vocals. So it's Shania and I yet again. We don't have George, but we've got Albert back. He was fishing last time, but we've got him on board on bass. So it's kind of stripped down in some regards because we don't have the keyboard, which tends to fill a lot of range and sound, but we've got Albert on his magic bass and me on my not-so-magic guitar, and we've got Shania on the magic vocals and myself.
And that most likely will be happening in Marine Park unless it comes down with rain.
Yeah, they're saying if it's rains, we'll go across the street to the assembly building.
Tony Tangs, thank you so much for coming down to the station today and talking about your life and your music and your wild inventions.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
something I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing well. It doesn't come from a prayer or a lighted candle. To open a door, we've got to turn the handle. We gotta lift a finger to make a change come around. We've gotta raise our voice. We've gotta make a sound. One thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come. I'm a wishing well. It doesn't come from faith, neither church's steeple. It comes from connecting with a thousand people. We gotta raise our voice, raise it loud and strong. Give the world another choice, sing a brand new song. Your liberty in your pocket. You can make it shine throughout the night. When it comes to freedom, you gotta rock it. You gotta hold it to the light. Peace is a good idea. It's the best one yet. But you're never gonna find it in your TV set. Never mind those wishes upon a star. Dreams without action won't get us far. One thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing well. One thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing well. One thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing well.
There's on the freeways, the trading hold on. been there for like never before. Never again to hunt on all fours. This is the good night. This is the good night. This is the good night. In the nighttime, see the bad bears slouching under streetlights. They're watching naked legs pass by, growling out. Hey, honey.
Hey,
hoof it on over here.
Mind my paws.
Hey, nice coat. Can you bear any chains? But me, I don't talk to bad bears. I just keep on walking. Bears on your back porch, digging in your garbage. You thought they'd socialize me on that. Starving, you call up their welfare.
Ring.
Hello.
You say,
I'd like to report some bears in my garbage.
Hello.
Bear welfare.
No. Don't put me on hold.
No,
hello.
This is not a dog. It's a
hello.
Bear.
What about these bears?
Yeah. About 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Doesn't anybody
right
care?
I got my watch on.
Are you listening to me?
O'clock. Hello. No, don't put me on hold.
What about these homeless bears?
Hello. Are you talking to me?
With Axis featuring local performer Katie Henry. We put out the word a few weeks ago that we were looking for bear stories, and people called up, and people have been in the studio recording them. If you'd like to record your bear story, give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. My phone number is 463-6425. You can leave it on my answer machine, or we can schedule a time where you can come in the studio and record your own bear story. Here's the samples for today.
This is Bridget Smith, and this is my bear story. Several years ago, I was walking down the stairs, and I was thinking about what I wanted for breakfast. I was wondering whether I wanted oatmeal or eggs, and I noticed that our front door was wide open, and all the way from the kitchen to the front door was a trail of empty bottles and wrappers. And I immediately thought, oh, I think we have or had a bear. And we live in downtown Juneau, and so it is common for black bears to wander around. But inside the house, it's a little bit different. So I sort of tiptoed around, and I looked into our living room, no bear, computer room, no bear, and no sign anywhere. So I was just sort of astonished. And so I walked into our kitchen, and there was a drawer and two cabinet doors that were open. Nothing else was really disturbed. We have a kitchen island, and she had deliberately opened the cabinet door on the right ignoring the ones on the left that only had pots and pans, but the ones on the right had sugar. So she had dragged out, and I call her a she because she went after sugar and she went after chocolate. She dragged out the bag of brown sugar, just sucked it right out, left the empty bag. She also found a bag of what looked like white sugar, but was really sea salt. And she bit into that and left it. And then she went to another drawer and opened it. And so delicate, too. No claw marks on anything. And this was where I kept baking supplies. So she found a bag full of chocolate chips, ate all of those. And then she found some baking squares, chocolate baking squares. And, of course, we know that they're not sweet, but she didn't. But she quickly found out, spit those out, and disappointed. Then she went to the a little dish, little green dish near the stove that I kept butter in, and she completely ate all of that butter and left one little bare hair. She really, had she found flour and eaten that, she would have had all the ingredients for chocolate chip cookies. That is my story about the bear that visited us early one morning and left not a trace except one bear hair and many empty packages. Oh, and one jar of honey, too. That was completely squeezed out and gone. It really made my day. This is Bridget Smith, and this is my bear story.
Hi, my name is Lynn Foley Bolduc, and here's my bear story. We have a bear and two cubs that live down the hill from our house, and they go for daily walks between 9 and 10 in the morning, and then again at 5 and 6 at night, and they walk around the neighborhood, they cut through our yard, and they take, they go down the street like they own it, and then they have knock down our wood pile and our fences, and they take our bird seed, and then they also hang out in our tree above our shed and just kind of hang out there and look over the neighborhood, and they just kind of own the neighborhood. And that's my bear story.
Hi, this is Susan Phillips, and this is my bear story. It was probably about 5 years ago, and it was in the summer. It was a warm, sunny day, and so we went on an outing, and we left our dining room windows open. I didn't think we left them open that far, and our dining room windows looked out onto our back deck. So we came home. It was probably 5 or 6 in the evening, and our driveway was at the bottom of a hill. And we pulled up into the driveway, and our tenant, who lived in our downstairs, came out of her house, and she said, "Hey, you guys, there's a bear in your house. I just tried to call your cell phone." She said, "The neighbors are here." And she went back inside. She was just out of the shower, and she had a plane to catch. So we saw our neighbors off to the side and by the back deck, and they said, "Oh, yeah, the bear's outside now." They said it's been taking canned food out of the house. And I just thought, oh, my God, what my house must look like. You know, maybe the bear raided the pantry. So I went in the front door, which was on the opposite side of the house, and went into my kitchen and dining room, and things were not very disturbed. I didn't see any evidence that a lot of canned goods had been taken out, but I could see the bear had come in the dining room window and left a paw print on the wall underneath the window, and then had walked across a bench and our dining room table and another bench and left paw prints all the way. And apparently, I think I had a can of nuts on the kitchen counter. So the bear had apparently grabbed that, gone back outside, and then we lived at the time on a big hill. Had lost the can of peanuts, it rolled down the hill, so the bear went back inside the way it had come and grabbed a bag of Trader Joe's wasabi peas off the kitchen counter, went back outside, and was having a picnic outside in our yard when I came home. So that was that. I think we yelled a lot, tried to chase the bear off, but it really didn't go very far away. And what else do I have to say? So a pretty small mess to clean up, but a great story. Again, this is Susan Phillips, and that's my bear story.
Thank you to all our bear story historians, and if you'd like to leave your bear story on my answer phone, call 463-6425 and leave it there, or arrange a time where you can come in the studio and record your own bear story.
AK is back. Every Friday on Alaska News Nightly, a mini-episode of the classic program explores the quirky stories of Alaskans.
What we're doing right now is bottling it so it is straight, 100% rhubarb juice.
Also, 300 Villages, AK's effort to put every Alaska village on the radio.
Showers? No. But, you know, there's other ways to figure that out. You can take a baby wipe bath.
Listen to AK every Friday on Alaska News Nightly.
Every one of us has challenges in life, and some of us may feel overwhelmed at times. Hello, I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Once a month, I host a program where I interview a local mental health specialist. We are live on the air so we can respond to listeners' calls and emails. Please join me this Monday night at 7 on KTOO. Together, we'll explore some of the ways we can live our lives more fully with greater joy.
Of Doug Adams, that's Adams with a Z. Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Knock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also live on the internet at ktoo.org. And we have later tonight on Left, Right, and Center at 7 o'clock, Theme, Default, or Deal. Next Monday at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Mary Hakala about next Wednesday's Family Science Night. I'll also get a preview of tomorrow night, next week's Douglas Library's presentation with guests Stephanie Waxman and Dennis Hicks. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and More. That's next Monday on a Juneau afternoon. Remember, if you have a bear story, leave it with me at 463-6425. Weather forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with a chance of rain, low temperatures around 50 degrees, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Forecast for Saturday, cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain and high temperatures around 62 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy skies. Sunday, cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 57 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a great weekend.